Okay, good. We're gonna start. So,
Right.
we're,
Real quick, do you mind if I say?
yeah, sure.
All right, cool. Thank you all for coming. It really means a lot to me. It really does. I appreciate it. My mom is very happy. This is the first time we've ever done something for my grandfather. As you know, my family is not so religious, so this has only been a new, actually, I shouldn't say that. My brother last year, when he was in yeshiva, they sponsored him of learning for my grandfather. So this is the first time I've ever done something for my grandfather, which he really was the main man of the family. The reason that we're going to be learning about tefillin tonight is because even though my family wasn't religious, when after like 3 or 4 years after I'd started putting on tefillin every single day, my mom just comes up to me out of, I don't know, like this wasn't like even a big deal for her. There was a pair of tefillin sitting on the table, and it wasn't mine, so I was very confused. And she says, "This was your grandfather's." This like didn't mean anything to her, but it was so confusing to me that my grandfather, in a non-religious family, or at least what I thought was a non-religious family, would had a pair of tefillin and kept it throughout his entire life. So to me, that's Aaron had the great idea of putting the two and two together. So so thank you, Aaron, for that one. And Rabbi, I really appreciate you putting this year together. This is why you should join Westside Sephardic Synagogue, because I don't think any other rabbi of any other synagogue would be here tonight. And I really do mean that, Rabbi. So,
okay.
So thank you
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. And thank you to whoever's hosting. Are you the official host, Scotty?
Or
the people who are living here, the official host? I'm not sure who to thank.
It's a joint effort.
But thank you, Laser, for the whitefish. That I'm definitely thankful for. Okay, so I decided to choose a topic that is, it's a famous Agadita that's somewhat mysterious. How do we know that God dons, that he wears tefillin, as we'll see, on, just like human beings do? And so we're going to study this Agadita. It's a Masachet Berachot. And then we'll see a bunch of different interpretations. This is meant to be interactive. So if you have thoughts or comments that you want to share, let's join and learn together. Okay. So we're Talmud Bavli Masachet Berachot, first source. Amarav Avin Barav Ada Amarav Yitzchak. Okay, so Rav Avin bar Rav Ad, this says in the name of Rav Yitzchak. This is a Rav Avin is a third generation Babylonian scholar. Minayin shehakadosh baruch hu meniach tefillin. How do we know that God wears tefillin? This is totally counterintuitive. God wearing tefillin? What do you mean? Human beings wear tefillin. Shene emar, as it says, nishpa Hashem bimino uvizra uzo. Hashem swears. What's yimino? What's yimino? His with his right hand. Uvizra uzo, on his strong arm. Bimino, zu Torah, this is Bimino is Torah, Shine Emar, how do we know that Torah is Yamin? Shine Emar, Mimino, Esh Dat Lamo, that's from Parashat Ha'azinu. Uvizro Uzo, Elu Tefillin, Uvizro Uzo, with his strong arm, this is Tefillin. Shine Emar, Hashem Oz, Le'amo Yitain. Now this Pasuk, Nishpa Hashem, Bimino, Uvizro Uzo, this is from Sefer Yishayahu. Sefer Yishayahu, go to the next source, Perek Samach Bet. This is a really, really powerful nevuah of Yishayahu. Yishayahu is saying, "L'man Tzion lo achasheh, l'man Yerushalayim lo ashkot." For the sake of Tzion, for the sake of Yerushalayim, I will not be silent. Ad yetze kanugak tzidkav yishata, until its righteousness comes forth. Obviously, very meaningful for today. Today's the way things are in Israel today. And then ultimately, in Pasuk Chet, Hashem promises, Nishpa Hashem bimino vazer ozo imiten. Hashem promises that our enemies will never sort of exploit our produce and our wine that we've worked hard on. So nishma Hashem bimino uvizro uzo. Now it's strange to connect this to tefillin, as we'll see, but there is a basis for this in the psukim, which we'll see in just a second. Uminayin, back in the Gemara, uminayin shehat tefillin ozhem li Yisrael. How do we know that tefillin gives strength to the Jewish people? Dichtiv, as it says, v'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha v'yir'u mimeka. What does that pasuk mean? What does that mean? V'yiru kol amei ha'aretz, yeah.
All the nations
of the world see us. Ki shem Hashem nikra alecha.
That God's name will be called.
It will be called upon you. V'yiru mimeka.
And they'll fear you.
And they will fear you. Where's this pasuk from? Anybody know? From Sefer Devarim, okay? So we know that tefillin is a strength for us, because why? It causes fear amongst the non-Jews, amongst the goyim. When they see our tefillin, they're scared. V'tanya Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omer, and Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol says, Elu tefillin sheberosh. What are we referring to that causes fear in the non-Jews? It's the tefillin sheberosh. Okay? And, okay, just put here second and third generation. Rav Avin and Rav Yitzchak are second and third generation. This is going to be important because there are different layers of this Gemara. Now, anyone here ever wear their tefillin in front of non-Jews? Yeah, in what context?
They walked by the room when I was wearing it.
When you were wearing it, okay. You ever like walked outside?
Also on planes.
On a plane, airport. Okay.
College. They do get scared of it there.
And they get scared of it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sometimes they like check it in security. Anyone here have their tefillin checked in security? Sure. So, okay. So I think Rav Fruman, who was a rabbi who lived in Tekoa, very fascinating thinker. He passed away a few years ago. And he had a relationship with Hamas clerics, okay? And he felt that in order to create peace, the rabbis and the clerics need to start getting along and speaking to each other. So we'd speak to people who we consider terrorists. And he would always wear his tefillin whenever he would meet with them, because he felt that tefillin is like the sign of a Jew. A Jew needs to be wearing tefillin, and it's based on this Gemara, okay? We don't really practice that. And the idea of wearing tefillin on a daily basis, we wear it for, I don't know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes every day. Pihalacha, according to Minag, I mean, people used to wear tefillin all day long, right? And there are all these gemarot. If you have to go to the bathroom, what do you do? Can you eat? Learning, falling asleep with your tefillin. When is this all relevant? When you're wearing tefillin all day. Now we've limited the time that we wear tefillin to just for shacharit, basically, in the morning. Okay, that's the first layer of this gemara. Let's go to the second layer. Amar le Rav Nachman by Yitzchak de Rav Chiya bar Avin. Now, Rav Nachman by Yitzchak says to Rav Chiya bar Avin, this is fourth generation Babylonian scholars. Hani tefillin de Mari Alma, makativ buhu. The tefillin that belongs to Hashem. What's written in it? Like, what's in the tefillin of God? Now, what's in our tefillin? Anybody know? What's inside our tefillin?
Shema.
Four parashiyot, good. Shema. Shema, what else?
Kadesh Li.
V'ayayim Shamo, that's three. V'haya ki yivyachat. These are the four parashiyot in the Torah that mention tefillin. And we put them in our tefillin. How many, we put them in four different sections in the Shel Rosh. That's why they're like little lines or indentations. That's because they're really four separate sections with four different parashiyot and, spread out. And whereas in the Shel Yad, it's one parchment with all four of the... Okay, so that's what's in our tefillin. But what's written in God's tefillin? What would you write in God's tefillin? So let's see. Amarle. So he answers... Okay, and he brings a number of pesukim. Umi ke'amecha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Okay, it says the pasuk, and umi ke'amecha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Who is like the nation of Israel? They're unique, they're singular amongst the people of the world. Okay, that's the pasuk that it brings. So then the Gemara asks, umi mishtabach kudsham b'reichu b'shivcha Yehudi Yisrael. Does Hashem take pleasure or gain praise from praise of the Jewish people? And the answer is yes, dichtiv, as it says, et Hashem he'emarta hayom, uchtiv Hashem he'emircha hayom, meaning, this is a unique phraseology here, he'emarta doesn't mean to say, but it means that, you know, Hashem sort of takes pride in us, and we take pride in Hashem, okay? Amar lahem ha'gadosh baruch hu l'Yisrael. And now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Jewish people, Atem asituni chativa achad ba'olam. You have made me, what's a chativa? You know what a chativa is? It's a term used in the army. What's a chativa? Chativa is like one unit. You have made me one unit in the world. We're going to have to talk about that. How do we make God one unit in the world? What does that mean? One unit. Ani esetchem chativa achad ba'olam. I will make you, or I make you, one chativa in the world. Okay, atem asidinu chativa achad ba'olam. Okay, and how do we have proof for this? Atem asidinu chativa achad ba'olam shene'emar shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You make me one unit in the world, as it says, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, right? Ve'ani esetchem chativa achad ba'olam, and I make you one chativa shene'emar umi ke'amacha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. You're one nation, you're singular amongst the nations of the world. Okay, so this is, there's like, the questions are just, what are your questions that you have so far on this midrash? What comes to mind when you're reading this? New?
Oneness.
Really? No, we have we've collected here the greatest minds of the Upper West Side. I mean, we have no doubt.
We have such a deep understanding.
So what are the questions you have in this Gemara? I mean, they're very basic. I mean, what's new?
I'd say just to start it off, like, one is like,
still kind of who cares that God wears tefillin? Or like, what does that like?
Yeah, what does it mean that God wears tefillin? Who cares that God wears tefillin? And I mean,
Well, I was just going to say that the commentary on the second section doesn't really follow the answer, right? Why do we say that God would praise Israel? Yes, we do. Because God says this.
Well, it brings a pasuk, at Hashem Ha'amarta.
Right, but making you a single unit is not the same as enjoying praise, and it doesn't really follow from the statement anyway. Hashem had mircha hayom, and then somehow they get to chativa.
That's right. That's a good point that those two ideas don't seem to be truly connected. Nachon. That might be a rationale for the tefillin itself. Why God is wearing tefillin and why we're wearing tefillin. I hear that. Also, what is this like? How do we make God a chativa achad ba'olam? This is a really interesting concept. Do we like unify God? You know, Sephardim specifically say the Shem Yichud before they perform berachot. Right? Anyone here ever do that before? The Shem Yichud. Anyone know what the words are? The Shem Yichud. Kudsha brechu shchinte. What does that mean? Wait, it doesn't say male and female. Stop getting into relationships. You have a one-track mind, Aaron. What does it say?
No, but for the sake of the unity,
right? L'shem yichud kudja b'chushchinte. For the sake of the unity
of
the holy name of the Shekhinah. Like, what on earth does that mean, right? So Ashkenazim don't usually say this. Don't usually say this. Actually, the Noda B'Yehuda of Yechezkel Landau was very much against this. Okay, whereas Sfaradim, they say this. We're saying, so something that we have this role of unifying God and the world. I don't know, whatever that means, okay? And that's just like God does it to us, makes us singular, unique in the world, we do it for God, okay? So that's another problem here. So now, layer number three of this Gemara, which is like the next layer of Rabbanim discussing this. Amar Rav Acha Breder Rav the Ravashi. Rav Acha says to Ravashi, Tenach b'chad beta, bishar beta mai. So he says, okay, he's like taking this idea even further. So okay, so we've already addressed the fact that God wears tefillin, and that God also, his tefillin has the same number of boxes that we do. He says, wait a second, like that's in the first box. It says umike amcha Yisrael, but what does it say bishar batei mai? What does it say in the other boxes of God's tefillin? So Amar lei ki mi goy gadol, umi goy gadol. So he's quoting four or five different pesukim here that are also quoted, that are also written down in God's tefillin. Okay, so then we take it to the next level, and this is it's not clear who's arguing at this level of the Gemara. It's called the Stam. The Stam is like later layers of the Gemara that are added by students in the yeshiva. Iachin efishi lotuvi bate. In which case, you have too many batim in your tefillin. There are five psukim or six psukim here, and there are only four. So how do we explain this? How do we narrow this down? Ela ki mi goy gadol, mi goy gadol didamyan lahadadi bechad beita. Rather, two of these psukim are in the same bayit. And then ashrecha yisom mikam chayzog bechad beita. Those are also in one. And then on, I say aloim ba'an chad beita letitchayon bechad beita. V'kulu kuti v'ba'adrai. And all of these are then written on the hand part of the tefillin as well. Okay, so this is this Gemara. It's very strange. It seems to make this comparison between God and human beings, God wearing tefillin, and this is. And by the way, we don't Sfaradim don't say Shir HaKavod, right? However, what does it say in Shir HaKavod? Shir HaKavod is Ashkenazim say it. No, what is Shir HaKavod? You guys know what it is? What's it say in Anim Zemirot?
Which part?
Kesher Tefillin, Her Ale Anav. Right? Timunat Hashem v'negin enav. Okay, so again, God is wearing this tefillin that's incorporated into Anim Zemirot, which Ashkenazim say every Shabbat or before Yom Kippur, whatever it is. Okay, so now we're going to get to a number of different interpretations of this Agadah. The problem is that immediately we run into a fundamental philosophical problem we run into a fundamental philosophical problem with this Agadah. What is that? The issue of anthropomorphism, that we seem to be talking about God in very, very human terms. Not only does God, you know, have appearance of a human being in some capacity, he's also performing mitzvot. He's also like doing things that human beings need to do. So this is very strange. So let's look at the Rambam. The Rambam here in Hilchot Teshuvah is going to bring, this is a very, very famous and controversial Rambam and the machloket between he and the Ravad. And we're going to see why in just a second. But we're going to capture here the spectrum of how to deal with issues of anthropomorphism within medieval Jewish philosophy. Okay? So what's the Rambam's opinion about? Does anyone know what the Rambam's view on this was, about anthropomorphism?
That is
all metaphorical. It's all metaphorical. The Rambam writes, Moren Vuchin. Wait, I didn't sell it. What was that? What did you say?
If you take it literally, you're a heretic.
Exactly. You take it literally, exactly. You're a heretic. And the Rambam, the first third of Moren Vuchin, his great work on Jewish philosophy, the guy that's perplexed, is a lexicon. Basically reinterpreting all the times in the Torah that human terminology is used to discuss God. And he says, he uses this principle, Dibra Torah Kelshon Bnei Adam, the Torah speaks in human terminology for our sake, but doesn't mean that it's telling us about God's essence. So the Rambam says here, Chamisha Hena Nikrim Minim. There are five people who are called Minim, who are designated as Minim. These people, unfortunately, they don't make it to Olam Haba, okay? So if you're on this list, you know, you don't have to share that right now, okay? Omer Ein Shem Shamalok, Ein Olam Manig, a person who doesn't believe in God, or doesn't believe that there's a ruler in the world. There is a ruler in the world, but there are two or three deities. You believe that there's God, but God is physical in some capacity or corporeal. And I took out some of them, but any of these types is a min. Okay, and this person is a min, Epicurus. They don't go to Shamayim. Now for the Ravid. Okay, that's the Rambam. We expect the Rambam to say what he says. Amar Avraham, Aleph Avraham. Everyone here know who the Ravid was? Anyone know where he lived? Where did he live? He's in Provence. He's the first person to seriously critique the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. The Rambam writes it, I mean, totally reorganizes halacha. It's encyclopedic, his work, and it's unbelievable what he did. The Ravid's like, he starts attacking it from the very start, and he also has some of the most severe critiques of the Rambam, and he was a great scholar who lived, he was contemporary of the Rambam. And now every Hasagot Ravad is quoted in the Rambam. V'lama kara leze min? He says, why is the Rambam calling these people mean? Heretics. V'kama gedolim v'tovim mimenu halchu b'zu ha-machshava. How many great scholars, greater than the Rambam, walked in this path and believed basically that that God has some physical attributes or there's some corporeality, whatever it is. The Fimashara Ubimikraut, and where do they get this from? Based on what they see in the Psukim. The Oteri Mashara Ubi Divrei Hagadot Hamishabshot Tadeot. And even more so from what they see in Agadot as well. So the Ravid is now, is the Ravid himself saying that he believes that God is corporal or physical or anything of that? No. But what is he doing? He's defending those who do. Okay, so he's sort of he's very tolerant of those who do, even though he himself might not actually believe in that opinion. Okay, so we run into a big problem. Big problem, again, and the Rambam says it to us very clearly, you can't understand this literally, this Gemara, because it runs into issues of heresy. And we don't really want to go there. Okay, so all of the Rishonim are then going to have to develop ways to allegorize or talk about this in some, as a mashal, or carrying some other meaning than that God actually does wear tefillin. Okay? So, let's look at the Rashba, Chidushei HaRashba. U'l'inyan mashem ra'kadosh baruch hu meniach tefillin, perish Rav Haiga'on. So the Rashba quotes Rav Haiga'on. Rav Haiga'on is Babylonian, 9th, 10th century. He's in Bavel. Zele shano hachi perishu rabanan, sheher'a ha'kadosh baruch hu l'moshe kesher tefillin, he says, no, God doesn't actually wear tefillin. That would be crazy for God to wear tefillin. What is God doing? What is he doing? He's
demonstrating.
He's demonstrating how to wear tefillin. He's demonstrating how a knot of tefillin works. Anyone here know how to like tie the knots of the tefillin, right? He's like doing a, like a YouTube video. This is how you... this is how you tie the knot. This is the Ashkenazi knot. This is the Sephardi knot. Right? He probably only taught on the Sephardi knot. The Ashkenazi made the other ones up afterwards. And this is what it means. And he brings a bunch of other proofs. He says also, by the Tavnita Mishkan, right? Hashem taught Moshe how to make the menorah, and also teaching Moshe how to recite the Yud Gimel Midot Rachamim, which is the basis for Silichot, which we say 40 days before Yom Kippur, etc. So this is the Rashba. He says God doesn't actually wear tefillin. Rather, God is demonstrating how one would wear tefillin. This doesn't totally solve the problem. God is still performing, if you will, some, sort of physical act. But what this does take away, what does this take away from the problem of the Rambam? How does this at least remove part of the problem? What does it mean? It means that there's no need for God to wear tefillin, right? God is only doing it for the sake of demonstration, but not because for any, self-serving purpose, whatever it is. This is the first opinion of the Rashba. Let's go to the Maharsha. The Maharsha of Shmuel Edels, he's, I think, 16th century, if I'm not mistaken, and he's commentary on the Agadot of the Gemara. Okay, so he basically says, Kvar katvu b'seh sod nistar, there's like a mystical interpretation to this Gemara. We don't know or at least doesn't want to share what that is. Aval ani ro'eh bo karov li pshuto, but I want to give the pshat, I want to give the simple explanation. Ki mitzvat inyan tefillin hu she'esh lanu liyot dveikim bo yitbarach. We're supposed to be dveikim. What's dveikim? We're going to be to cleave, to cling. Ta'kadosh baruch hu. V'hanachatan aleinu hi mashresh chinah aleinu. When we wear tefillin, God's presence is resting upon us. That's really powerful. You know that in the Svaradi Sidurim, you know what it says like on the top of many of the pages in Svaradi Sidurim? What does it say? Anyone know? Yeah, it says Dalif Nemisha Taumed or Shiviti Hashem Negdi Tamid. Why does it say that?
Because that's the first Sif in Shulchan
Aruch. Okay. Yes. it's possible. So why do they call the first
the
and not
the
second?
But it's the same idea. But it's like a capstone to the whole thing.
It's specifically when you're wearing tefillin, you're like God's presence is with you, right? So you have to you shouldn't be watching the game. You should have the TV on, right? There are all these things that we don't do when we're wearing tefillin. Not that we should do those things at other times, but certainly not when wearing tefillin. And that's the idea. There's dveikut hashchina during when we wear tefillin. And so too, Hashem has dveikut as a connection to us. So we're clinging to Him, cleaving to Him, and God is cleaving to us at the same time. And this is what it means that He wears tefillin. Now, what about the different psukim? He goes into detail with the different psukim are. So I numbered these 1, 2, 3, 4. The first pasuk, "Mi goy gadol v'gomer b'chol koreinu elav." This is referring to our connection to Hashem through tefillah. How we connect to God specifically through tefillah, through talking to Him. "Umi goy gadol shelo chukim mishpatim tzadikim," we have righteous laws. That's how we connect to Hashem through Torah. Okay, these are the different means that we have to connect to Hashem. Some people, for them, like tefillah, prayer is the way that they connect. Other people, it's learning. They're more intellectual. They're more rational, more cerebral. And then the third example is psukim that relate to Yeshua, Maasei Niflaot, Naraot, miracles. And the fourth, Lutitcha Elyon, B'chad Beita, Hu Amorel, Dveikut Bo B'Ma'ala HaElyona, the highest level of connection. I'm not sure exactly what this is. Kitichti L'Tila L'Shem U'L'Tiferet. Okay, this is the opinion of the Maharsha. Okay, page 2. Let's now go to the Tzlach. Okay, the Tzlach. Anyone know who wrote the Tzlach? The Noda Biyuda, yafeh. Okay, Rav Yechezkel Landau. He's where'd he live? Where is he, Rabbi? Prague. He's the chief rabbi of Prague. Lives from 1713 to 1793. He's Eastern Europe or Central Europe, and he is. He's famous because he dealt with the Jewish community during emancipation, during when modernity and was taking place, and he had to address the Haskalah, he had to address reform.
There are contemporaries, but he was like the strictest one.
He took a strong stance, but he has some really interesting teshuvah. He's one teshuvah I remember about: are Jews allowed to hunt? Are Jews allowed to go out and hunt? And that own guns. These are very relevant questions for today. So anyway, his opinion, we won't read it inside, but what he says is as follows. He says that just like there are, we have enemies who are trying to destroy us and eradicate us, but Olam HaShafel in the lower world, so too there are those who want to destroy us, but Olam HaAlyon, and amongst the angels and amongst, I don't know, different celestial metaphysical forces in the world. And so just like the tefillin protects us here from our enemies here, so too God dons tefillin. It's like tefillin turns into some form of armor. And actually there's a source for this in Tanakh, that tefillin Shaul HaMelech, he goes to battle, it says, wearing tefillin. Okay, so he was wearing tefillin. I'm not sure, I guess he didn't use it as a weapon. Maybe he strangled his opponents or something.
Is there a thing also about the king having a sefer Torah on his arm, always, even also when he goes out to war?
I don't know if it's on his arm or not, but he does have...
Even when he goes out to
war,
right?
He's supposed to go to war, yeah.
Similar.
Yeah, it could be a similar idea. Yeah. Now, I'll tell you a story about strangling and tefillin. My father went to high school in Stablecare in the Negev. This is where David Ben Gurion lived. And do you know John Hutt? Do you know John Hutt Laser from Teaneck? No? Anyway, we have a next door neighbor called the Hutts. And they, my dad gets to his room in Stablecare in 10th grade. And, whatever. Next day, he's putting on his tefillin. And there's his roommate, this guy, Paul Hutt, who's now our neighbor in Teaneck. And he thought my dad was trying to strangle himself with the wraps of tefillin. He thought he was going to hang himself, whatever it is. So maybe that's how Shaul HaMelech used this against his enemies when fighting the war. Okay, so that's the opinion of the Tzlach. And now we get to Rav Kook. Now Rav Kook, this is from Einaya, Rav Kook's commentary on the Agadot of Masachet Berachot. And so let's read this together. Okay, you want to read, Scotty? Leon, you want to read? I want someone with a Brooklyn accent.
To understand the meaning of tefillin for God, we must first understand the meaning of tefillin for us. We utilize our intelligence and talents to meet our physical needs. We plan and calculate struggle and toil in order to acquire food, clothing, shelter, and so on. This is the natural use of our intellect and will. However, life is meant to be more than just satisfying material needs. We should utilize our higher functions, our powers of intellect and resolve, imagination and emotions, to dedicate our lives to ethical and spiritual growth. This is the foundation of our service of God, to impress upon us this higher use for our intellect and will.
Now, intellect and will is referring to what? What do those correspond to? Intellect is tefillin shel rosh, right on our heads, and tefillin shel yad is our will, which is from the heart. Okay, so that's the correspondence. Yeah, keep going.
To impress upon us this higher use of our intellect and will, we secure the tefillin shel rosh over the mind and bind the tefillin shel yad on the arm, opposite the heart. These two levels, the natural and the spiritual, also exist in the world at large. At the basic level, the laws of nature ensure that the universe functions and living things grow. The world's order and equilibrium are governed by the laws of physics, biology, and chemistry. Yet, there is another, higher dimension. The universe has an inner drive that seeks to uplift humanity and all of creation to a lofty moral state. The imagery of God wearing tefillin is a beautiful metaphor for the universe's spiritual yearnings. It portrays a universe that is guided by an inner drive for holiness and spiritual advance. Our tefillin contain verses that describe God's unity and providence. If God wears tefillin, then what is written in these tefillin? Encased inside God's tefillin, the sages taught, are verses that speak of the Jewish people and their unique mission. Who is like you, people Israel, a unique nation in the world? God made a special covenant with the Jewish people, and he gave them the Torah so that they would act as a catalyst for the world's moral ascent. If God's tefillin is a metaphor for the world's inner drive for spiritual advance, then it follows that they should contain scrolls that refer to the vehicle for that ascent, the people of Israel.
Okay, so what's he saying here? What's Rav Kook saying? A really powerful idea. We have intellect and our will, right? And we use these to fulfill our natural needs, physical needs, etc. But the idea is we're supposed to elevate these things, our intellect and our will. And how do we elevate them? Through what device, what vehicle represents, symbolizes this elevation? What is that? That's tefillin, shorosh, and yad. And that's why specifically we're elevating our hearts and our minds. And he says, corresponding to this drive to yearn for spirituality, it corresponds to, on a higher level, that the universe is also striving and yearning in this direction. Okay, so the tefillin shel God, of God, it's not that God is actually wearing tefillin, But this captures the inner spiritual drive of the universe. And this is a very optimistic worldview, that Rav Kook believes that inherent in the genetic makeup of the universe is a move, is a drive towards spirituality. Okay? One could certainly characterize the world of the universe very differently, much more pessimistically. But he believes that things are constantly yearning and moving towards fulfillment, completeness, completion, which is ultimately Yimot HaMashiach. That's Rav Kook's perspective on the universe, and that's what Tefillin means in that context. Okay, so for the next source, I'll just say quickly outside what Dr. Moshe Shoshana is saying. He goes through the different layers of the Gemara, and he points out that we'll go to page 3. He points out that the different layers of the Gemara, the different Amoraim who are arguing, they seem to get closer and closer to like a physical understanding that God actually physically puts on tefillin, right? Originally we said God wears tefillin. Then we ask, well, what does a tefillin look like? And how many batim are there? And what are the psukim inside? It's almost like we're getting closer to a position of actually that there is some form of this physical tefillin. So he says in the last paragraph, however, as the Gemara increasingly demands that God's tefillin look just like ours, we get the sense that the Gemara may mean that God actually wears physical tefillin that look like ours. This would follow the position of the Tosafists, who insisted on a literal interpretation of Agadah. Okay, this is contrary to the Rambam, and this is when the Ravad is referring to those who believe in this, he's referring to the Balei Tosafot. And in Provence, he connected the Ashkenazim, who are in Germany and France, with the Rambam, who's in Sfarad in Spain. This would follow the position of the Tosafists, who insist on a literal interpretation of Agadah. Indeed, there is much evidence that many medieval Ashkenazic rabbis believe that God has a body in which he could place the tefillin described in the Gemara. Okay, so there is some stream of thought within medieval Ashkenazi thought that there's that God actually does in some ways wear tefillin, and that's what the Ravad is referring to. Okay, now let's just talk about this idea of unifying God's name, unifying God's name in the world. Okay, now we say this every single day: Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. What does that mean, Leon? What's that mean? Hero Israel, yeah. Hashem is one. What does it mean, Hashem is one, in that context? What's that mean?
One God.
Okay, there's one God, as opposed to many gods. Okay, so that's one possibility. Rashido explains in Sefer Devarim, Hashem shehu Elokeinu ata velo Elokei ha'umot. Hashem who is our God and not yet the God of the nations. Hu atid liot Hashem achad. In the future, he will become one. Shene emar, as it says, ki az efoch el amim safa b'ra likro kulam b'shem Hashem. Because all the nations will call out God's name. Vene emar b'yom ahu Hashem yeachad u'shmo achad. And it also says, on that day, Hashem's name will be one. What does it mean, Hashem will become one? It means, obviously, God's not going to change. God's nature is not changing. God, of course, God is always one. Is uniform, whatever it is, right? What does it mean that God's going to become one? That the nations of the world will come to accept God's oneness. Okay? So, what role do we have in bringing this about? Okay? So, this is a really interesting question. And the Rambam, you look in Hilchot Melachim Perek Yud Aleph and Hilchot Melachim Perek Yud Bet, the Rambam talks about the times of Mashiach. He has a very interesting worldview. The Rambam believes that the Muslims and the Christians play a positive role in bringing monotheism into the world. Even though he considers them distorted versions of Judaism, nonetheless, they do play a positive role. But he ultimately, the Rambam says that in the end, everyone is going to, believe in God, and even says they'll, if you go to the bottom of the source, Perek and Perek Yud Bet, people will also not steal or destroy things. They're also going to eat kosher. There seems to be an indication, according to the Rambam, that non-Jews are going to not just accept upon themselves the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, but maybe even accept Judaism in some capacity. Now, what role do we have in bringing this about? It's a really interesting question. Do we only have to believe for ourselves and the Jewish community and, et cetera? Or do we have to, you have all these Kiruv organizations, but those are meant to speak to Jews, right? Are we supposed to be going out and missionizing to non-Jews? Do Jews missionize? Is that something we do? Yes, no, what do you think? Do they missionize to non-Jews?
No, sometimes. Not really. I don't think so. You haven't seen Chabad,
Right? It's an interesting question. Are we supposed to missionize? I mean, we want God to become one and for all the nations to accept God's, you know, unity, belief in God in the world. But are we supposed to missionize? Laser, what do you think? No? Okay, so practically we don't do it much today. During Second Temple period times, historically Jews did missionize more. And one of the reasons that Christianity was so effective at spreading its word was because there were many Romans or Greeks, whatever it is, that were already moving towards monotheistic outlook because of their exposure to Judaism. So how do we what's our role and responsibility in this regard? Because as again, we speak about how we make Hashem a chativa achat ba'olam, just like He makes us a chativa achat ba'olam. And so there are a number of different explanations here. One is a Kabbalistic interpretation that ein melech b'lo am. There's no king without a people. What does that mean? That, and this relates to this, the shem yichud kucha b'yichu shchinte, that in some capacity, by performing mitzvot, human beings are very powerful. We are able to reconnect the intra-divine attributes and qualities, the ten sefirot. We bring them back, based in Lurianic Kabbalah, that the world, the vessels are shattered in some capacity, and by us doing mitzvot, we elevate the sparks of holiness from these broken vessels, and we unify God's name in the world, whatever that means. It's not meant to be literal, but whatever that means in a spiritual, metaphysical level. And that's one explanation of how we do help to unify God's name in the world. However, the Rambam, if you look at the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam, quoting the Gemara in Masechet Yoma, says that there's a mitzvah to love Hashem. What does it mean to love Hashem? It means not only that you love God yourself, but you also, Ukvar Amru, let's go with the bold-faced words here, Ukvar Amru Shemitzvah Zokolelet Gamken Shenidrosh V'nigra Anashim Kulam. We're supposed to call out in God's name. We're supposed to encourage other people to follow God, to believe in God. And who did this? Who modeled this type of behavior?
Abraham
Avinu, right? At the Nefesh Shasu v'Charan, Unkulus explains that refers to the Nefeshot that he converted in Charan. And how, of course, do we do this? How do we spread God's name? I mean, a lot of this is connected to Kiddush Hashem. The Rambam has an expansive, maximalist interpretation of Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem is not just dying in God's name or sacrificing your life because of persecution, but everything that you do, that every behavior, everything that you do that people are watching, that affects how people view Judaism and view God and, etc. And when you have a Jew who's acting ethically and, pays their taxes on time and, helps their coworkers and is, honest and his integrity, all these things, then it causes people to respect God and to love God and to want to come close and to want to, achieve, those types of values as well. And that's what the Rambam says in Yochai Yisod HaTorah. He says, especially Tamidei Chachamim, Rabbanim, all the more so that they have to be very careful how they behave because everyone, everyone's watching what they do. And we'll just finish off. If you look at the box in the bottom, this idea of unifying God's name in the world, which are represented in the Tefillin, as we go on, is also what we say in the Kaddish. Yit gadal v'yit gadash shemer abba. That let God's name be made great and sanctified and made known. And this obviously connects to your grandfather, who. This shir was given the Ilui Nishmato and Shdehei Nishmato to Rabbi Tzura Chaim. And Skadi, I hope, and for all of us, I hope that this shir will help you understand the mitzvah of tefillin, that you should wear tefillin every day with enthusiasm, with kavanah, with meaning. And the tefillin, again, it should go way beyond just wearing tefillin. These tefillin should become a gateway towards how we engage with the world and how we represent ourselves and how we represent Hashem to other people. So chazak
olam.
Okay, so you want to say Rabbi Yochanan ben Nekash Amar Tzadikus Baruch Zokot Et Yislatikach Here Balam Torah Mitzvot Shneemar Adnai Chafetz The Ma'an Tzidiko Yagdil Torah V'Yadir. Okay, so we'll say Kaddish.
East is this is the wall, right?
Yeah.
Kaddish. get up. Hold on.
I got this.
He's got it.
He's got it. He's got it.